Hello and welcome to Imp's Adventures Podcast and the Social Suplex Podcast Network. Help the network out by leaving us a 5-star review, give a donation directly through Red Circle, and become one of the amazing community by joining the Social Suplex Discord. Link is in the description. Order merch from all our shows over at chopped-tees.com. Thank you to Dickie. Read the Social Suplex newsletter over on Social Suplex. Thank you to Trish and Tim and everybody who's contributed as well. Listen to the other top-notch shows here on the Social Suplex Podcast Network, One Nation Radio, Keeping It Strong Style, All Things Elite, Wrestling Art with Chris Things, Trish and Sarah, Tunnel Talk, and Sam Brown's AEW Match Guide. My name is Matt Mayer, aka Imp, and this is your quick look back at the WWE week that was. 30 minutes of bloody hell. Oh, bloody hell. bloody hell. Where to even begin? Like, I'll do my best to cover Raw and Smackers, as is the format, as is for the cause of this show. But we spent a portion of the week questioning how smart it was to even have Night of Champions take place. So we have to start with that, because Jesus Christ. So WWE in Saudi Arabia. I'm not going to retread ground or anything, just because, you know, in a matter of time, I've still got a format to try and keep up with. I'm not going to, like, uproot the entire format just to give an entire background on this, but long story short, Saudi Arabia government paid WWE to put on these shows and do propaganda. It's shifted from in the early days being like, look, we let women drive now, aren't we progressive? It's now shifted into full-on just like a tourism push, which is still a propaganda push. It's just way better done propaganda. Like, that first show they did, that was just horrific, horrific propaganda. Egregious stuff. That's kind of where all your memes of the beautiful city of Jeddah, that's where they all started, was in that show. And over the course of the years, they still say the phrases like that, but propaganda within the show is done far better. I always make that point of, still propaganda. Like, you're still watching a show full of propaganda, full of tourism adverts and things, but it's far, far better done. From a critique point of view, they're doing the propaganda better, which is why you see more people starting to be like, oh, it's not that bad. Yeah, because it's done well. It's still propaganda. However, then we come to the world events that have taken place this time last week since I did the show. So it was wild to me watching John Cena's promo beforehand, before the whole weekend, and before I'd watched Raw. I didn't watch Raw until the day of this recording, which is Thursday. I was trying to leave it as long as possible, just in case stuff came out. Because I know the night before I'm doing this recording, the WWE were making their flight to Saudi Arabia. And I was like, I'm going to hold off to Thursday, going to watch Raw. I would like during my lunch break, and then I'm going to finish it later on. I'm going to do this thing here. Like, okay, cool, that's nice and easy. I'm giving loads of time for like anything to come out that I can, like, I've got quite a bit of time. But this is not a politics podcast, so I'm not going to dig into all that stuff. I'm not going to like unearth a UN report and just be like, well, this is all like this. I'm not going to be digging into all of like the reasons beforehand or just the echoes of Bush and Blair. But in terms of what's relevant here, in the very specific niche of, I don't know, war and Middle East and WWE, like, it's in this very niche bracket of how does this affect the wrestling? I know it's everyone's number one question. It's the number one question on the end, everybody's lips. Like, I know this is horrific and it's bad, but how does this affect my wrestling show? Well, I'm here to get you covered. I'm the guy asking those tough questions. I mean, Sean Vassap is the tough guy asking those the guy asking those tough questions. But anyway, Trump bombed Iran. We're not here to talk about like the lies surrounding all of that and all that stuff that's been happening beforehand, been happening since. That's not what we're here to cover. What's relevant to us is that Qatar closed their airspace after Iran retaliated with strikes on a US base in the country. Immediately bringing into question how wise it is to air a beacon of America just across the water. If you don't know, in terms of like where is Qatar and Iran in comparison to Saudi Arabia, there's a I was going to say in British terms, like, it's a piece of water which looks about, I think it's about twice the width of the British Channel from England to France, which is, it's a reference point that I can use, which really helps me picture how big that gulf is. But, and I realise to Americans that means jack shit. I don't know if you've got an equivalent, but it's kind of like that distance of just over some water. So, no, pretty fucking close, it's fair to say. Sean Vassap has been constantly saying that Saudi Arabia have been expecting the show to go ahead all week, with one of the biggest reasons cited being the amount of money involved. But one note coming out of that is the talent no longer gets the huge bonus for working the shows. Amongst all of this, this little detail has managed to come out from this. WWE still gets paid the same amount, so no guesses where that money's no longer trickling down from. The question of whether talent should be given the choice to still work the event, pressures of going ahead with the show. At the time of writing, the talent on the route to the kingdom, as far as I know, as I'm speaking these words now, they are there. They have landed. They'll be going to their hotels and, I don't know, having a nap. It's a long flight. My other ick is the potential of an already propaganda heavy Saudi Arabia government funded show then getting even more with US look at us standing amongst the adversity grandeur. You're not brave for turning up to a guy's house, punching him in the face, and then performing a gig the next street over. That's not you don't then get to go look how brave I am. That's not, like, no. That's the current state of affairs of things. There is, obviously, I could turn this episode into a full on, like, here's a bunch of research, here's a bunch of all this stuff, like, but that's not what this podcast is. Got a format, and that's how it's affected the wrestling, where it's brought in these huge questions of, is this wise to be doing this right now? Did the talent get a say? All these sort of questions. Because I do like, yeah, it is just interesting that within that, oh, the talent would, surely they'd want to go because of the money incentive, and then it just coming out, like, no, they don't, that money incentive's not there anymore. What do you mean it's not there anymore? They're still getting paid the same amount by the government. What do you mean the talent don't get paid there anymore? I felt like that, weirdly, that talent thing felt like something I just wanted to highlight amongst everything that's going on. So it's a little nugget that came out. Anyway, huge credit to Sean Westapp, as always, for just digging into that stuff and finding out what he could. Admittedly, kind of tight lips, it's not a lot, but, you know, the kind of people you're asking to try and get this information makes sense, you're not going to get out of it, but, you know, you ask anyway. A non-answer is always still an answer. Anyway, shall we jump over to Grand Rapids, Michigan? I guess there's not a lot to say there unless I just turn this podcast into, I find another gear and just turn it into a full politics podcast, but that's not what we're here for. So, I instead have got to talk about a 2-hour, 5 minutes wrestling show, edited down to that on Netflix for me, 3 hours on USA for the rest of you suckers in America, from Grand Rapids, Michigan, King and Queen of the Ring semi-finals, and R-Truth main event, and either the best or most Cena segment of his heel run, depending on who you ask. So what did I think? What did I think of that main event segment, all that stuff? So let's jump on over to SmackDown.
Because you change your values as much as I change my t-shirts. You're just a loudmouth opportunist who will step on the necks of people who actually work hard if it gets you ahead. Where's another camera? Hey, Claudio Castagnoli. Hey, Nick Nemeth. Hey, Matt Cardona, how you guys doing? Oh yeah, we're still on, baby.
So, what are we thinking here? One of heel Cena's best, or a soft generic impression with the gloves fully on? I've seen the full spectrum of response here, ranging from the taking the piss out of it, like, lol, this is so soft, into the, oh no, sick, bruv. It was sick. I don't know if kids speak like that anymore. I doubt it. That's how the kids spoke when I was. Just in terms of, like, the flow of what happened. Poor Kit Wilson was put on the altar in sacrifice to the Black Mass, but Truth beat the Englishman up and locked in an SCF before Alistair could slowly stride to the ring. Reminded us the man's more serious edge before the main event. Black didn't take nicely to that, but it led to a backstage bit between former Judgment pals with Truth and Priest. We later got a full Corey Graves narrated VTR play on Cena and Punk, making sure we're all caught up and history is rewritten to fit the current yin and yang story that they're telling. The main event match itself was, you know, not peak wrestling, but the crowd are loving Truth, so sure, why not dance with it for a beat? It's a little note that does add a little bit to Cena's character, and it's something else on the show as well, a complete character transformation for Truth as well. I was a little scared when I saw 17 minutes left on the clock after John had finished his entrance. Oh no, I don't want to see these two for that long. Oh no. All good though, all good. This thing was actually about 5 minutes of walking till the interruption ran. Almost like a main event fake out, with the real final segment being a Cena Punk promo, which I guess was how they did the pipe bomb in the first place. The same main event trio that set up that pipe bomb 14 years ago. Punk was kicked in the dick, hit over the head with the title before getting put through a Slim Jim sponsored table. At least the commentators don't say, look, it's the Slim Jim table. So it's just, there's that. It could always be worse. These Slim Jim table sponsorships could always be worse. Then there's the Cena promo itself, trying to be shoot and copying Punk's words back at him when they're not able to say a thing about comments that all of this hypocrisy and things is kind of based off of. I do like the idea of, you know, at the start, just saying the exact same words as Punk's promo and it reflecting really well onto what he's trying to say about the Punk character. Like, it really works in proving the hypocrisy of Punk. Less so in the shoot aspect, because they're still, at the end of the day, dancing around the thing. They can't actually mention the big thing which this entire kind of hypocrisy angle is built around. They can't mention it. That's why I predicted in the first place that it wouldn't ever be folded back into the WWE product, because they wouldn't be able to mention it. So it's a very difficult thing to be dancing with. What caught me off guard last week when they did fold it back in, it's like, oh, that's weird, okay, I see where you're dancing with this. Then Cena didn't call out the hypocrisy. Then here, we've got this whole big shooty angle where he calls out the hypocrisy of the character, but he never mentions you taking the money to do the match at Saudi Arabia proves the hypocrisy point of making all along. He never says those words, or never really even hints that that's how the hypocrisy is proven. I just feel like it's a note which is useful. But anyway, the aspects of that didn't really work for me. I feel like he stayed more in character whilst delivering the promo, calling out Claudio, Nemeth, Rebirth, Cardona, a la the original Cabana mention. Like, for me, the lines that actually worked were all about the hypocrisy rather than the callbacks. You're no longer the voice of the voiceless. You're a friggin' millionaire, despite yourself. You're not punk. You're a capitalist. And you're not against TKO, dude. You are Mr. TKO. Your tweets are strong. Your actions are weak. The closest we got to mentioning the thing without mentioning the thing. But all of that stuff deflects really well. The callbacks to the punk pipe bomb and the other things, it didn't quite work as well. So was it the best heel Cena promo? I mean, parts of it were great. It's what makes it just like an interesting one to analyse, just because parts of it generally did work for me. Whilst, I would say the pipe bomb structure, it gave voice to the parts I liked, but then also tried to prop up the other parts that I didn't like as much. So I'm not somebody who's, I don't fall on either side of it, really. I don't go, crap promo, or amazing promo. I'm somewhere in the middle. The promo itself is quite yin-yang. For me, flipping back and forth one, when he's doing the reflecting Punk's character back on himself with almost a lot of Punk's own words, it worked really well. It's just still got that one major problem when Cena says, in order to get your title match, you have to prove that you're a hypocrite. Within the story of the show, how is that happening? Because he's not folded back in any form of the comments that Punk has made. In the reality of their show, what is making Punk a hypocrite? That I don't get. That's the one thing. And you don't have to actually say the tweet or anything. You don't have to read that out. You can have the Cena character say the line, or at least alludes to something about him taking the match proves it. And that can be enough, in a way. Yeah, there was already that negative, going to Saudi Arabia is bad, which WWE don't want to put out there. They're about to do a propaganda tourism advert. So surely they don't want that. So don't fold this in. Is it? I think they said that last week. I guess it's almost in the way they like to write stuff, it's almost in their nature to want to try to fold the reality back in. And I do think that Cena using the words of the pipe bomb back on Punk and it really working is a nice, neat little touch. But it's not quite as successful as I feel like as it could be, because they can't mention the thing. And that's really hurting it. I think part of that is the long-term reason it's relatively okay. Which is, I'm always going to go against myself a little bit. The one reason why I can just go, calm down, Matt, just calm down, is because we're meant to be against Cena and for Punk. And long-term, we want to see Cena overall proved wrong. Even though he is going to be technically proved right. He's going to beat him in a way, because we've got to get to that Cody rematch. We've got to get to whatever's coming down the line. But personally, if you're doing a character deconstruction, go all in on it. Don't hold shit back. That is, I say hold shit back. They're trying to dance around the topic, which they're trying to then use as the source for the entire heat of the reason why Punk would be proven a hypocrite. So my number one question, looking into this feud, what is making Punk a hypocrite? In their storyline, what actually is making him prove that he's a hypocrite? What is it actually? Because is it Saudi Arabia or not? Because they can't say it. They can't say that's the reason why. I'm still at that same point with it. This promo didn't do anything to change my mind. Pretty much all the comments I've made there are the exact same things I said last week. Yes, it's the part of it I like, but because you can't mention the thing, you then don't get that heel moment of bad guy being proven right. Because this is that point, this is that moment, like long term, absolutely fine for Cena to get wins. I understand that you want people to continue to cheer for Punk, but really you want to collect all of this heat for Cena, nom 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 nom, so that a different guy can come along later and guess all those bigger cheers because of it. So yeah, anyway, same as I thought last week, this promo didn't change anything. Anyway, let's jump on over to the King and Queen of the Ring first semi-finals over here on Smackers. Bliss versus Asuka. Still can't say her name because I never remember to turn my echo off. The crowd were kind of quiet for this one. Happy to see Bliss doing things, but there was just the expectation of it being only a matter of time till the newly returned Asuka snapped in and won. Became a tad quicker and more competitive after the ad break, but really it felt like a perfectly fine telly match. Just the addition of the tournament final being on the line. Bliss went to twist on the top, but second-guessed and read Asuka's potential counter, instead just getting twisted into the armbar anyway. No hesitation the second time, and she was met with knees before the running hip bump. I got what they were going for, but in execution it was just a bit odd. Doesn't make Bliss look smart, because we were shown she was indeed right first time. She looked stupid because she went for it again after we're told she had that knowledge. They didn't really show anything to be like, okay, now I can do it. I've done the thing to make sure that she can't snap in this time. Like, no, she just did like relatively decent fly, went for it again. It's like, oh, I got caught this time. Yeah, you already told us that you knew that. So yeah, it came across as a finish that didn't have that much thought put into it. As in, it evidently had thought. The flow was fine, whatever. It's just like, you've just told me that she knows, and then she loses by doing it again. It's like, oh. I think any finish that makes you go, oh. It's like something's gone wrong there. Then onto the King of Ringside for Smackers. Randy Orton versus Sami Zayn. It's just been a run of seeing my Seth Sammy Gunter SummerSlam dance crumble before my eyes on each successive episode. Ahead of the match, though, Cody had a chat with Jey Uso, ahead of their King of the Ring semi-final and Raw. Friends promising to properly give it to him in their match, but Rhodes didn't get a word in before Sammy's music hit, the man getting his own words about going for the World Championship. Oh look, it's Randy too, out in his wrestling underpants and oiled up ready to deliver his lines, teasing Sammy as World Champion before swinging into Randy versus Cody or Uso. I read that as a little promise that they're at least thinking about giving Sammy his moment, but it's not going to be now. And I was right about myself being wrong. I like the idea of using this tournament to push Sammy up to that World Championship level. Instead, it feels like we're directly back to a path of Cena versus Cody for our first two night of SummerSlam. Our match here was fine enough. A Randy Orton Teddy match in the middle of the show in 2025 is never going to set the world on fire, but Sammy's got enough of that fire to at least keep us at those 3 stars of enjoyment. The crowd really into the final flow as they at least let Zayn counter the RKO into near falls. The biggest pop of those span into a blue thunderbomb. Then a great reaction as they fully bore Orton popping up after Sammy had hopped over him off the top. Shrugged off again, but the follow-up charge was finally caught in your rule of three. Sami Zayn finally eats an RKO. So I didn't mind the way that they danced with it and they showed Sammy being able to fight it off numerous times. And it was like a snap attempt after a snap attempt that finally got him. But you know, I had my three-way. Sure, they could still technically go that route, but now it feels like not happening until later. It's not happening until later. And onto the other notes, because everything else on this show is the issue that you get when you're watching SmackDown. Well, Monday Raw's got a similar problem where the middle of the show on Raw gets very quiet and then they're so loud for the opening wherever Rhea Ripley is and the main event. Then over on SmackDown, you've got your Cody stuff, but they're so quiet. They are so quiet. It's like, well, you have like a couple of matches that the crowd actually are interested in, and then it's just a bunch of almost like fluff stuff it feels like on SmackDown. It happens quite a lot where the show just doesn't feel like it's important to watch, even though you're technically just seeing all of these characters getting their opportunities just as much as you are on Raw. There's something about the show where it's been extended 3 hours, but it's not like it feels like they've filled that time with anything worthwhile. So on that, let's go through the stuff which I've deemed fitting into that category. LA Knight opened the show. He put his plate of beef on the table to cut Jabber on Seth and the Killer Bees. Called out the man himself, but got Heyman instead. All your typical Jabber until Big Bronson and Bron Breakker strode on out. The crowd immediately chanted for Punk, but Knight didn't need them. He just needed a chair. Set up for Knight versus Reed later on in the pre-main event death slot. A post-match Killer Bee beating to showcase what's in store for Seth's other higher up the card opponents down the line. LA Knight just being used to prop them up for their real storyline. Poor lad. Solo had a chin wag with Fatu. Sakura said in mind that he could win Big Jacob back. Instead, the man laid down the challenge of a US Championship match. Then read the attempted Solo strike, but got hit by Cobb. Only for the man Sakura has been trying to recruit in Jimmy Uso to side with Fatu. I've seen this dance before. If we're really trying to swing Fatu into the babyface side, oh, Jimmy's going back, isn't he? After Bliss's Queen of the Ring loss, Chelsea Green stepped to her backstage and instead got Charlotte Flair. A wee continuing of this thing building a character for the tall blonde one. Bliss saved her from the Scottish post-match beating with a reluctant look from them both. I said last week, for Charlotte Flair's character long term, even though this isn't lighting crowds on fire, this is needed. This kind of thing is so needed for her character. And I feel like this kind of short term crowds aren't really that interested in what's being served up. Long term will pay off in terms of just trying to come up with something for her characters just a bit more than what we've been given. It was very, very evident in that WrestleMania build that there just need to be something more to her character. And this feels like the avenue to try and find whatever that is. Sticking with the women, Nia Jax called out the WWE Women's Champion Tiffany Stratton. Both latters were given generic ass lines, swiftly into announcing last woman standing for next week, and quickly into two leg drops with a title raise from the baddie. The whole thing felt like it'd been worked on for 5 minutes max. The most generic lines, the most generic flow, the most generic ending into the heel holding the championship to then send us in. It's like, okay, we've got to hype this match, we've got to promote it, we've got 5 minutes, go. What can we come up with? Gave us another Naomi attempt to cash in halted by Jax to just remind us of that dynamic as well. But yeah, generic ass segment. I can't give it any lower critique anything than that. And that's SmackDown. The entire show wasn't generic ass, but it had segments. The crowd have invested somewhat in the King and Queen of the Ring stuff. I said that the vibe of those matches felt so damn similar to the Money in the Bank stuff that it's going to feel weird once we're out of this period, because we basically had two pay-per-view builds in a row, which have been built to in a very similar way. Them being singles matches are kind of helped helps direct it a little bit, but I still just had that vibe about them, even in a singles flow. But the main talking point was Cena's pipe bomb, or at least reflection on the pipe bomb. And whether you like that or really didn't, well, with that, that really seems to be how you feel about the show as well. I reckon if it went to cage match, it'd be properly split, and this probably has like a, I don't know, a 6 or something. Just because it'd be so split on how people felt about Cena's promo. And I wouldn't be surprised if really that rating reflects the main event segment rather than it does the entire show. To be fair, I said that there was a lot of stuff that didn't really feel that important. So a 6 feels about right, to be fair. But there'll be people who rated it lower. But I suspect that if you were to read their review, it would be so much on the Cena stuff and not really the vibe of the rest of the show. I'm making a prediction without looking. That's me going, is it okay to just make shit up if I'm being open about making shit up? It's kind of based on this. Anyway, let's jump on over to Columbus, Ohio for Monday Night Raw. 1 hour 52 edited Netflix version for me. Oh, but don't you worry, they wasted time. It didn't feel like a 1 hour 52 show for me. It felt like your normal length, even though for me I had like 10-15 minutes longer than I've been getting recently. Oh, don't you worry, I found a way to to make it even feel even quicker. A show mainly built around the last two semi-finals for the King and Queen of the Ring tournament. So let's just jump on over to Monday Night Raw.
You can't rely on blind faith to get the pregnancy support you deserve. Ritual's Essential Prenatal Multivitamin is the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Get 25% off when you visit ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Looking to buy your dream home or rent that perfect apartment? With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Set up your gotta-have-it wish list, and Redfin will send you real-time notifications for properties that match. And when you're ready to see it in person, scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Thinking about selling? Redfin can do that too. In fact, Redfin agents close twice as many deals as other agents, so they know how to get the best price for your home. And with a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin charges half of what others often charge. So you could save big, like really big. Last year, Redfin saved home sellers $118 million. So whether you're buying, renting, or selling, Redfin's ready to help you win. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.
Third massive cutter sustained by Jey Uso.
Hope Randy Orton was looking. And now Cody Rhodes, crossroads. Cover. Cody Rhodes is in the finals of the King of the Ring.
It's been a while since I've seen a Raw show responded to like it was a one-match card. Tepid reactions for most of the night, but they were loud for Rhea Ripley, and they were loud for Cody Rhodes versus Jey Uso in the King of the Ring semi-final match in the main event. That crowd fully into both lads, happily eating up everything they served on their plate. To the point of a "this is awesome" chant during the slow climb to the ad break superplex spot. They were damn well invested. It's what that showed to me. If you're getting that hyped up for that after they've done a move sending Cody to the outside and then you slowly crawl back in and you build to that, they were chanting "this is awesome" for it, and I was like, it proves they're invested. That's how I interpret that chant when it happens in WWE now. Also, a Raw main event with no interferences that was just allowed to play out between two baby faces, between two good guys just having a hard fought contest, both lads given the room to counter and flow. Jey hit a flow towards the end, hitting everything as they built really well to Cody surprising with a pop up from the top rope, halting an Uso splash and right into an avalanche Cody cutter. Crossroads to the win, and we finally got that Cody versus Randy match. No autumn walkout afterwards, just a bit of time between mates as we went off air. But man, when you watch these Cody segments after watching this run through Raw, you realise that, oh man, they really have been missing somebody like Cody. Because sure, Cena's been turning up every now and then, but you notice it. When a proper favourite isn't there, you really feel it. With Roman gone, you're kind of like, okay, Cody's taking the baton. But when Cody's also not there, you felt it. And this almost felt like Jey Uso had temporarily been given a bit of a run over on Raw, being like, okay, you're like a main character for a little bit. But I guess part of the issue there is he never felt like a main character. because we all knew who the main character actually was. And as soon as he came back, and this match was almost like, okay, take the reins again, drive this horse to SummerSlam. My King of the Ring final was Sami Zayn versus somebody else. I don't think I would have had either Cody or this. It's because I'm in my mind, I'm holding Cody off till the end of the year and just having other people try and dance with it. And maybe Cody kind of just doesn't believe in himself because of what happened. He's still angry and amps up about it, but he needs that extra something just to convince him, no, he can do this, or to get the people on his side to be like, no, we can do this, something like that. That said, I'm not taking into account the necessary business for a two-night SummerSlam. That also factors into their decision to do this. I assume that is why we're fast-tracking towards it, rapidly running towards, maybe Cena even dropping the belt. Because my initial thought was, well, why don't you have Cody versus Cena at the end of the year and you build up to it throughout the rest of the year? But that doesn't give room for, well, what if John Cena actually does retire at the end of the year? You also need that period where it's kind of like you get that respectful goodbye from the fans. So his character somewhat needs to heal and swing back. So if he drops the belt at SummerSlam, you then got that time to do that, revert the character back. Or you use SummerSlam to give us a proper disappointment of, oh no, our hero's failed again, he's actually going to do it. So it's one of my main issues with the Cena versus Punk feud. Make the villain like properly get a win. Not just like a pinfall win, but an actual moral victory. Stuff like that. He's got a point and he proves his point and he's right. And that makes him even more of a villain because he was correct. And the way he went about it was wrong and he was correct. It's like, oh, but they're kind of like not really committing, so it doesn't really come across that way. And I feel like that might actually be the overall sentiment for this, because he's still getting those cheers and things. And part of that is, well, it is genuinely for the final time, so they're saying like a genuine thank you, we're not going to see you again, which does then conflict with the heel run. And maybe things would have been different if the original plan had played out into his heel at WrestleMania rather than going into it as a heel. But yeah, maybe there is that feeling. There is just that feeling of, oh, he's been given these heel victories, but because he's not also been proven to be correcting the points he's making whilst he's going about it wrong, it almost feels like normal heel stuff of saying that he's being proven right all the time, but we need to actually be shown it. And this Punk feud was such a good opportunity to do that. So if he does drop the bout at SummerSlam, it's almost a disappointment. If with the way this character is going, you really do want there to be that like next gear into, oh no, he's actually going to do it. And that's why I'd leave it to the end of the year. He's threatened to do it. So really do have the doomsday clock. Actually go for it. Get close to it. Like it's a dramatic thing. You put up the doomsday clock, you've got to let it tick down. He can't just tepidly be like, ah, now we'll just put it back on Cody. Like he'll be the good guy, carries over, you get the heel Cena kind of turn back by the end of the year. And for the Queen of the Ring semi-final, Jade Cargill versus Roxanne Perez. Roxy used her pace, but eventually she had to try and actually do something to Jade, and that's when things immediately fell apart for her. Perez got the already in the ring treatment after the ad break, which felt wild to me for a tournament semi-final. These are the little details that tell you it's not important, which then clashes with the commentary, match length, Night of Champions hype, but that sentiment remains. Like, it's the semi-final of a tournament, is it important or not? If it's important, give it the grandeur. Don't have one of your characters get a full-on entrance ad break, and then when you come back, the other one's already in the ring. Then the match itself was, you know. The crowd responded so quiet again, but they popped loud whenever Cargill did a big and strong spot. It seemed like the spot was meant to be, in the end, a powerbomb lifted back up for Jaded. But it's going to get no stick from me that they instead did powerbomb and then kind of just make sure Roxy gets into position properly to do a Jade instead of trying to lift her up into it. You're not going to get stick from me. Like, if you're not set right for it in the moment, I'd rather you just reset and do it normally than potentially hurt one of you. Just breaking the illusion for a second to make sure you're all right. And the opening segment of the show, Seth and Friends. Sethy Boo with Heyman and the Killer Bees in tow. Baker was in his ring gear and Heyman with the Money in the Bank briefcase. 5 minutes or so, that felt double that as he cut jab on the lads against them and hyped up the Killer Bees. Meant we'd killed 15 minutes by the time the bell rang for Bron versus Penta. Glowing review of a nothing opening segment that just repeated and reaffirmed the aims of Seth's group. Literally added and progressed nothing. I mean, that's technically a lie because it felt like he progressed the way that he is talking about the crowd and the way that their chants are just reinforcing his point that they don't know what they want and that's why he's needed. I've talked about it before where I've been impressed with his crowd manipulations it's turning heel, and it's happening again here as well. But in terms of like actual stuff like about the characters within the show, that's an evolution of crowd work, and it's good, it's kind of proving his point. But in terms of like everything else, like this didn't add anything, and we've gotten, what would I say, like 15 minutes into the show and that's when the bell for Penta Breaker finally rings. And that match was just kind of a display for Breaker, which to be fair I was calling for to help the Bees not feel like standard heavies, but it really didn't feel like a match going anywhere, a kind of match that would be cut in half on a 2-hour show. It's not like they used the time to do anything for Penta anyway. A kind of middling match But the finish came in a springboard snap spear counter, so who gives a shit? Right? Penta goes to do a fancy springboard and gets speared in half. Yeah, okay, doesn't really matter about the match at all, does it? You bubbled it up, you kept it at a certain level, and then bam, Ingram spear. And finally, there was a match that I wanted to want to talk about, and instead I have like two or three notes and that's it. It's like, oh damn it. The Women's Intercontinental Championship, Becky Lynch versus Bayley. A perfectly grand Teddy title match, building up to the frustrated champion attempting a chair pile for a count out. But I've got few notes because Lyra's presence became the focus point. She helped Bayley up, stopped herself from hitting Bex, took the dropkick hit. At that point, okay, she's become a focus, but she's not going to be the ending. Okay, fine, that's how I was feeling at the time. But right when Bayley had the match in control and she was on the top rope to go for the elbow drop, Lyra gave in and jumped her fellow Irish lass. It gets you into a triple threat, but that was hella dumb. Just how am I meant to get behind the Lyra Valkyria character when she does something like that? And then you got to play up the drama of Lyra Valkyria, but she's like, please, I'm sorry, I just got so worked up next week on the show. And then Bayley being the babyface trying to calm it down or whatever. Like, and then no, Becky's the real villain type of stuff. But she's just such a dumb way to get to it. It just feels so dumb. But this falls right into that camp of, you stopped the match to tell your story when we could have, at the point where Lyra's been kind of took the drop kick and she's pushed Bayley out of the way. At that point, when Becky does that, Becky can cheat and whatever, but you don't need as big a Lyra interference to then swing into a triple threat. It could tell the story within the match without the need to just stop it, just end it. But this segment was more about teasing, giving us Becky and Bayley to see what it would be like, stopping that full on delivery so that we could then get it later down the line, or so we can just get it for the triple threat. Which I won't lie, is a triple threat, which should be pretty good, but I'm not going to lie about it's like, yeah, the match might be good, yeah, but this said part of the build, this was so dumb. Just so stupid. Anyway, onto the other notes, where I feel like I've got quite a few other notes for this show, which those are the three things. I described it as it felt like a one match card, because really, even though I talked about those other segments, the crowd were really only hot for the main event and Rhea Ripley, and that's it. But we'll start with the Intercontinental Championship match between AJ and Dom, postponed, which has given room for Sami and Cross to get onto the Saudi card last minute. We got a sit-down interview with Goldberg as he delivered his written lines as well as we know he can, which is, you know, he's Bill Goldberg. He's tried acting, we've seen him. Later in the show, Gunther cut his response. A great delivery directly to the camera in the corner as he promised to destroy the man who used to be Goldberg. Judgment Day drama roundup. Liv and Dom both injured. Finn immediately took the lack of Liv opportunity to run coach, hyping them all up and priming Raquel to eventually accept the idea of Perez as a new tag partner. Sans Liv, we marched into hyping Ripley and Rodriguez instead. It almost didn't matter to the crowd because they just went crazy for Rhea anyway. And the table. Arguably the Slim Jim sponsored Wood got just as big a pop as Rhea Ripley. Roxanne the distraction allowed Raquel to snap in with the Tejano bomb. A segment which for me really worked. It felt like they got Rodriguez onto a level which where they could have an interesting match between each other. And then Adam Pearce confirmed the match as well. And ending on a little time note. So happy I'm not watching this show live. As I looked at the timestamp and saw the pre-main event Ripley Rodriguez segment ended at 1 hour 20, then the bell for the main event rang at 1 hour 34. I skipped over 15 minutes on the edited version of absolutely nothing. I emphasise that because that means on the live version it was probably about 20. Within that time was a quick Pierce Ripley matchmaking, 5 minute Cena Punk VTR promo, rundown of the whole Night of Champions card, 6 minute Jey Uso entrance, double Pyro Cody. That's a lot of time in between. And maybe I don't include the entrances on that if something happened before it. It just kind of like, oh god, you had a hot segment and then the bell for the main event is over 15 minutes later. That is a lot of time just sitting with nothing. On the TV version as well. But anyway, the review of Raw is that it was a one match card, which I wasn't expecting going in given the hype that they'd given it. But then I forgot what WWE are like. Sometimes they can't get out of their own way and they have a women's IC match and it feels like, oh, you could do something with this. And then it's just like, oh, okay. Like, no. It's like both women's title stuff featured on the show for both SmackDown and Raw. Like, they just both felt so generic ass booking. Like, I guess the triple threat, the way that you've done that as well, where you've set that up, it's so like that's generic ass bullshit as well. It's like, you can do better, WWE. The reason I critique like this is I know you can do better, but it's just generic stuff. And sure, this week, there's quite a bit going on. It's fair to say. If I'm going to, in my head, if I'm going to be more lenient on any week of something just feeling a bit generic and the time not being dedicated to it, might be this week. Fair to say. SmackDown doesn't get an excuse. No, you don't get an excuse, SmackDown. Nothing had happened yet. Then that's no saving the Strat and Jack segment. No excuse. Monday Night Raw, maybe a bit more understandable. You know, you got a ton of injuries. Loads of stuff suddenly needs to be... I say ton of injuries. You've got two Judgment Day injuries. Suddenly loads of stuff needs to be written. Liv Morgan was meant to be like a key component for both the women's title on Raw and for the Evolution card. Suddenly, out of there, Dom seems a bit picked up a bit of a niggle, so he's also a bit out. There's a lot of stuff in the air when it came to that Monday Night Raw show. So a bit more forgiveness, but of course it fell onto the women as usual as it does in this current era. Yeah, maybe forgiveness is a strong word. It's more of a... sometimes I expect better of you, but you've actually met what I expected. So it's whatever that is. Like, are you disappointed? No, because it's what I expected. Oh, that feels harsher when I say it out loud. I thought, let's try it out loud. Let's just try to see how it feels. Like, oh, that felt harsh. Anyway, I'll be back this time next week to see what on earth happens over the weekend. And we'll see. There's also the... I think I said it earlier, but there's that scenario of we just get a generic show, just with more US propaganda. Refer to my metaphor. Anyway, so I will say thank you for listening, liking, engaging in any form, any manner. Always appreciated. Never take it for granted. I'll be back this time next week to talk about the Saudi Arabia show and for Monday Night Raw, so you don't have to watch it. And please don't watch this. For any weekend, I'm like, I'm the one, so you don't have to. This is that weekend. This is it. With that, I bid you adieu. Let's see what happens. I bid you adieu. Adios.
You can't rely on blind faith to get the pregnancy support you deserve. Ritual's Essential Prenatal Multivitamin is the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Get 25% off when you visit ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same Game Parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.